Freud divides the periods of early life into three stages. One is the stage of infancy, during which the child has all his primary shocks. This comes up to the second period, which he calls that of latency, which is the period of ego discovery, from about 5 or 8 years to 11 or 12, up in that area there. And then comes the movement toward puberty and the development of genital sexuality. Now, this period is the one where the child moves away from what might be called infantile mythology, the commitments to the parents, the notions that the moon is following him when he walks, that animals have communication with him and all that, this sort of spontaneous child mythology. It's during these ages that he moves into a sphere of experience of reality, and in our culture world, science. It's during this period that the little boy becomes gradually aware of a scientific as opposed to mythological attitude. In the primitive societies and in the Oriental societies, the mythological attitude is insisted upon, that the child should continue to interpret the world in terms of the mythological patterns. Those are the critical years, and they're the years which in traditional societies do not produce the little scientific mind, the mind ready for judgments, critical judgments of reality and decisions of action and so forth on every single level. Well, perhaps I better get on to Carl G. Jung. Freud, in his psychology, saw, in big general terms, sex as the main determinant. The child's relationship to the parents, the erotic relationship to the mother, the fear of the father, and then the transfer of the sexual commitments to an individual of his own age, and so forth and so on. The first challenge to this came from Adler. He said the main drive in the individual is not sex, but the will to power. The little infant is in a great disadvantage with respect to its parents. It's there with two giants. It's got to put through its purposes, and it has to learn to wheedle or to frighten or one way or another to get the parents to do its will. The child is in an inferior position. Now, if it finds itself really inferior, suppose it grows up in unable to do this, unable to do that, or as Adler says, with some inferiority of the organs, or perhaps of a type that is unusual in the neighborhood and so is outstanding and center of attention, or if the parents have been brutal and the child hasn't been able to put itself through, it has a will to compensate, an overcompensation, which leads to what he calls an inferiority complex. Now, he said this is fundamental to human life. All individuals are really based on this order, not that. And sex itself is itself a field for the achievement of sense of value for oneself or of conquest. In other words, he interprets sex itself, sexual activity itself, as a function of the power drive. Now, it is with respect to these two that Jung comes into the picture. Jung says that the psyche actually has a fundamental energy which manifests itself in the two directions. Now, in some people, possibly because of infant relationships, the stress goes to power, in which case the sexual life is in a secondary position. This type, primarily power-oriented, asking always, how am I doing? How am I doing? Am I making it? This is what he calls the introvert. This is somewhat different from the common use of the word. Jung's definition for the introvert is the power-oriented person who wants to put through his ego achievement. The sex-oriented is outward-turned. Falling in love means losing yourself in another object. This he calls extrovert. Now he says, every individual is both, with an accent on one or the other. If you have your accent 60% over here, it's 40% here. Now, when you run into a situation where your normal orientation doesn't function, where it isn't carrying you through, you are thrown back on the other, and this inferior personality emerges. The characteristic of the inferior personality is compulsiveness. You can't control yourself. Your voice quivers, you blush, you get angry, and so forth. You're out of control. The inferior character has taken over. It is more primitive than the developed other one. He uses a fine word on this, enantiodromia, which you all know from your Greek. Dromia is to run, hippodrome, where hippos or horses run, dromedary, a racing camel, enantio in the other direction running, turning turtle. Now, the interesting thing about midlife is that a chronic enantiodromia takes place normally. You have been, let us say, a power man. You've had it. You have achieved what you set out to achieve. Or at least your wits have been about you and you've seen it wasn't worth achieving. When that moment comes, the change takes place. You have what Freud calls disposable libido. Available libido. And where does it go? It goes over there to the twinkle twinkle side. And Papa begins to see the little girls. Then everybody asks, what has happened to Daddy? This is the normal phenomenon of the nervous breakdown in late or middle age. A gentleman has gained all the power in the world, and he's had this image of retirement. I'm going to retire and go fishing, because fishing was what he was in love with when he was 11 years old. So Daddy goes fishing. And by God, he's got everything. He's got all the fishing tackle and the right kind of hat to wear, all the flies in the world. Actually, he expected to pull up mermaids. And all he gets are fish. He's beginning to go to pieces. Now we take this attractive side. Just take the woman who has become mother of a family. She's perhaps had several lovers besides. She now has grandchildren and recollections of lovely dance engagements and all this kind of thing. And she's had that too. She becomes a power monster. This is the fabulous mother-in-law. Her children, whom she's brought up, are beginning to leave. The whole sense of loss of power, inferiority, comes over. She has to grab and tell them, shut the window, open the window, put the baby in the bath, take the baby out of the bath, do this, do that. And is compulsive about it. It's a fantastic thing to have this second part come up. I'm overplaying it because this is diagrammatic, let's say. But the problem is, when the crisis comes, are you going to be able to absorb and integrate the other factor? The problem of middle life, Jung calls integration. The integration of the personality in terms of an individual culture experience. And the whole psychology of Jung is based on the idea of these interactions. Now let me just compare. Freud has the wish and the prohibition. That is essentially a psychological, sociological collision. Jung has the idea that the collision is intrinsic to the psyche. That is to say, every time you stress this side loses. In Wagner's ring, Alberich gets the ring of power by spurning the allure of the Rhine maidens. That's exactly the power man. The other man would say, I don't want to make history, I just want to make love. He's over on that side. But someday, it'll dawn on him, I didn't make history. And the terrible thing about this enantiodromia is that it is filled with the echo of too late. And this is where the whole thing becomes disastrous. Now, instead of simply going into the forest, says Jung, and canceling the whole darn show, the Occidental approach is this of achieving wholeness. And this is exactly the Greek idea again.